Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A woman is executed for murder. A school bus driver is arrested for child porn, and a woman fights a bear with a zucchini.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, September 24th, 2010. A Clackamas County man was arrested Wednesday by the Oregon Department of Justice on multiple child porn accusations. Neil Brian McKinney is being held in Clackamas County Jail on 10 counts of encouraging child sex abuse. His Facebook page says he's been a driver dispatcher with First Student School Bus Services since September of 2008.
It's really a bad month for bus drivers everywhere.
Can you bump me up a little bit? I want to be louder. I just want to be louder.
Is this like a birthday request?
This is my birthday eve.
This is really what you want for cumpleaños años.
Look at who's been learning another language.
That's what I'm talking about.
Have you been going to the Spanish classes secretly?
And I did it without accidentally saying that you've completed your anus, which is how it came out when I was practicing it this morning.
Although I believe it is pronounced años,
That's what I just said.
Oh, did you say años? All right.
See, now you're projecting a whole anus thing onto me, and I'm not going to have that. Not on a Friday.
No, I would not project an anus thing onto you.
Friday is no anus day here at Legion of News.
Well, speaking of which... So this fella,
wow.
A search warrant indicated that police went to a manufactured home in Oregon City where they determined through internet and DMV records that McKinney lived there. On July 14th, the Attorney General's office received word from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children that 8 videos depicting child pornography had been uploaded to a computer with an email and username that turned out to belong to McKinney. The affidavit said on December 8th, 2008, an online social networking group called Asato Azul had 9 videos and 59 images of child porn uploaded from a member with McKinney's internet service provider number, email, and username. So subpoenas have been issued in the last 10 days. Investigators have sorted out who lived at his address, who drove what vehicles. They made the arrest. His Facebook says that McKinney is a 1984 graduate of Rex Putnam High School. He was with the Oregon Army National Guard from 86 to 2009 and in the Army Reserves from 85 to 86.
Does he look creepy?
Oh, yes.
All right, he looks completely creepy.
Yeah,
this looks like he looks not unlike actually Gordon Jump in that episode of Different Strokes where he tries to touch Dudley in the bike shop.
Oh, God.
Which is now a thing that apparently we're required to reference like once a week as Gen Xers. Some law was passed. If you mention Different Strokes, you must within 30 seconds reference the very special touching episode.
He looks like that guy that if you were a kid that lives in that neighborhood, you'd be like, oh, yeah, he's the creepy guy that lives in that house.
He's the Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all knew.
You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. Don't forget this very fine news broadcast is available later on today via iTunes. If you like, you can also download it directly from legionofnews.com or from PDX.fm, and it's available on your mobile or handheld device. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Teresa Lewis, called the mastermind in the murder-for-hire deaths of her husband and stepson, were executed in Virginia on Thursday night. Her attorney, Jim Rocap, claims Lewis is borderline mentally challenged and was manipulated into taking part in the killings. Rocap says why her execution was wrong.
It is our hope that Teresa's death tonight will cause a reexamination of the badly broken system of justice that could allow something as wrong and unjust as this.
That always happens. Yes, executions always, they always do a lot to provoke a long search of the soul.
Larry Traylor with the Department of Corrections says Lewis's last statement was aimed at Kathy Clifton, the daughter of murder victim Julian Lewis.
Maybe aim is not the right word to be using. That might be an improper choice of...
Ms. Lewis did make a last statement. She said, I just want
an electrifying last statement.
To know I love her, and I'm very sorry.
Okay.
Katie Beck witnessed the execution.
When she was led to the gurney, I think became visibly more nervous, visibly more upset. And when she laid down, the corrections officer that was closest to her head on the top of the gurney was actually tapping the top of her shoulders to try and calm her, it seemed.
It seems like that's a bit of a fool's errand. I think that's what we call a pointless gesture. And probably a bit of a Herculean task. No, calm down. It's going to be fine. I mean, except for the death part.
Okay, all of this aside, whether or not she actually was smart enough to do this, whether or not it is fair that she received the death penalty while the guys who actually carried out the murder are just in prison for life and are not being executed. All of that aside, I have a genuine question for you that I'm hoping maybe you can answer.
Is this a thing where you have a genuine question for me or you have a genuine question, like, for humanity, but I'm the guy who's in the room with you, and so I get the question.
Pretty much, yeah, because I'm not saying this to make any kind of a point. I really don't understand this.
Is this because of the anus thing I said earlier?
No.
Okay.
No. Why do so many people consider it wrong? So wrong. Why is it considered wrong to execute people who are mentally retarded who commit capital crimes? As opposed to, like, you know, I mean, I can understand why people would think it's wrong to execute anyone. You know, I don't personally agree with that, but I can understand why someone would have that position. It makes
right.
complete sense to me. But why is it considered, you know, immoral, basically, to if somebody murders someone and it turns out they're retarded, why is that person, is it immoral to execute that person?
I'm so lost in a conversational thicket. I'm unclear about the question here.
There was a big deal in Texas about them executing criminals who were
mentally enfeebled,
mentally retarded.
Well, because the claim that the ACLU made in Texas is that it was akin to, this is the ACLU's claim, that when they executed the guy in Texas a few years ago, their stance, the ACLU, was that if you execute a guy who has, like, the mental capacity of an 11-year-old, then you are de facto executing an 11-year-old, which you wouldn't do because you recognize that they are not at the age of majority or decision-making.
Okay.
End.
All right.
So there you go.
Okay.
That's their response.
Because the whole thing within the state of Virginia here was that they can't execute anyone with an IQ that is gauged at being 70 or less.
Because that is the level of imbecile,
right.
Don.
And this woman's IQ was gauged to be 74. And so, therefore...
Are you asking me to really find logic in our capital punishment system?
At this point, I'm just sharing the information.
Yeah.
But no, it's one of those things that that I was just hoping someone could actually... I guess you explained it.
I don't want to shatter any illusions that you may have, but... Our system of justice doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
And it seems to be a bit arbitrary and capricious. So, I mean...
Okay,
See, here, you're doing that thing, though, where you say that, but you knew that there was no answer. You knew there was no logic to the way we execute people in this country.
I did not know that. I thought maybe you might be able to... And you did actually explain it, at least to a degree, that I can understand what the...
Well,
that is the
claim of the you know, like the ACLU and then the folks who were really opposed to James, whatever his name was, that they executed a few years ago in Texas. But yeah, just going forward, just understand this: the American justice system doesn't always act consistently or fairly. I'll write that down and I'll put it on a plaque in the studio, just in case.
Write it on the whiteboard right underneath where it says, "Get a big black dog up ya."
Yes.
Which I have no idea why it says that on the whiteboard.
I think it's an Australian saying. I think that Kenny and Jules I think it's something that they were throwing about phrase-wise on Fun Employment Radio. And
okay.
So they threw, and then everybody was drunk, and so it became even more hilarious than it is. And it is actually a pretty great phrase.
It is. Because
it doesn't mean anything, but it sounds like it means lots of things. So it got written on the board right to the, directly to the left of where it just says, "Obama snuff stupid criminal," which actually is sort of ironic and appropriate when you consider the story we just had.
What we're talking about. Yeah.
And then below a thing where the big-ass sandwiches folks have actually just put a big heart.
Yes.
So, all right, there you go. You are listening to Legion of News right here, PDX.FM. This is Dawn Taylor.
A woman from Montana fought off a 200-pound trespassing black bear with a zucchini from her garden. The bear, who had been spotted just 25 yards away eating apples from a tree, attacked the woman's collie on the back porch of her home late Wednesday night. In a brave attempt to save her dog, the woman tried to intercede, kicking the bear with her left leg as hard as she could. Subsequently, the bear turned on the woman, swiping at her leg and ripping her jeans. The woman retreated back towards her home, chased by the bear, who then stuck his head through the doorway. The quick-thinking woman grabbed the closest object she could find, a huge zucchini from her garden, and pelted it at the hairy intruder.
Well done.
The vegetable attack proved too much for the bear as he turned on his heels and fled back into the wilderness. Authorities confirmed the woman, who lives 15 miles from the town of Missoula, and her dog had not sought medical attention. The vegetable patch bear is still at
now
large.
You don't want to screw with people in Montana. They'll screw you right back. And we've talked about the zucchini thing already a couple times this year, because we've reached that point in... There aren't a lot of people in my neighborhood who have gardens or anything, but there are a couple. Sort of as the gentrification of my street continues, there are more and more people moving in. They just rototill the entire front of the place up, and they just start growing stuff. And then you just see those zucchinis are like the size of a canoe. And they're just sitting in a big bag on the corner saying, "Somebody please take these away from me," because they just become huge and unwieldy.
So I'm actually a little sad I don't know anybody anymore who grows zucchini, because I love zucchini. So I would actually enjoy that when people would do that whole, "Please, for the love of God, take zucchini off my hands." I'm like, okay,
Rick Emerson
will.
Might be able to hook you up with that.
But I do, because I enjoy the zucchini.
All right.
The FDIC wants to hear from you by next Monday about its proposal on how banks should deal with customers when it comes to overdraft fees. Kathleen Day with the Center for Responsible Lending explains the proposal.
Wait, hold on a second. This is the FDIC. This is the Federal Deposit Insurance, whatever.
Indeed.
So what, are we all voting on this or something?
I don't know.
Or is it just like a show of hands? When they say they want to hear from us, they never actually...
Yeah.
You're not allowed to roll your eyes.
I did not roll my eyes. I closed my eyes in weariness because I've been dealing with this with my own bank. They sent out a letter and said, "We're changing the whole thing with the overdrafts and the this, and if you want it, you got to ask for it, and you have to like sign this or go online and click a thing."
Well, this is something different.
Apparently, we didn't do it.
This is,
and so we don't have it anymore. And they closed our line of credit. And I'm just
like, is someone feeling anxious about her upcoming birthday?
No, I'm excited about my upcoming birthday. I'm eager to get to it. That's the thing. This whole day is just a placeholder. I'm just treading water, waiting to get to the birthday.
You're phoning it in today.
I'm phoning it in.
Okay. Well, at least you've been. Thank you for being upfront about it. Here's the thing: is that like, when I just said, "Don, let me ask you about this FDIC story that you're reading," and you just, it was like I had just put sacks of flour on your shoulders. You just kind of went, "Ugh."
Well, you know what it's like when you have to deal with your bank about anything, and you're trying to get them to explain things to you. And then they explain it to you like it should make perfect sense to you, you stupid child. And it still doesn't make any sense. And you go, but why would you do this then? And they just look at you and then they say something. It's like your dentist, when your dentist gives you crap about, you know, not flossing. Or you just are treated like a child.
What?
Nothing.
No, continue, Don.
I don't want to now.
Okay. Anyway, I was just going to say the sort of like sag that you had. I was going to say it's an imperceptible slump, but it wasn't even. It was very perceptible. It was like you were suddenly on Jupiter and gravity had increased 100-fold. That's what happened inside my mind when you said, "Rick, let me ask," and by ask I mean shout, a question at you about the death penalty.
I did not shout.
I'm just saying.
And I asked nicely.
I'm just saying there's a certain... charming stridency to your delivery today.
I'm passionate.
Okay, I have people
skills. I'm not angry.
Let's just stop for a second and just one more time. We're just a little. What were you going to ask me about the FDIC?
I wasn't.
I was asking you.
I was just.
You were venting your irritation.
My closing my eyes and sighing deeply.
I think this is something else that they're doing, though. I mean, it is overdrafting, but I think they're talking about something else. They're not talking about the business where you have to go in like 100 times and get them to turn off the overdraft protection. I think if this is the same as another story that I heard this morning, I believe that what they're talking about is that if you opt to leave the overdraft protection on, which is basically with which is just code, by the way, for them letting you bounce checks.
Yeah.
If you just opt for whatever like insane reason to let the bank screw you out of $35 or something every time you bounce a check because you're writing checks that you can't pay, I think the theory is that they're going to put in some sliding scale of penalties.
It says that they would require the banks to reduce the fee after a customer has six in a year.
Which is fundamentally illogical, which means that the more you screw up and the more irresponsibly you treat your money, like the less you will be penalized.
Yeah.
What is the cut here?
That is overdraft. Well, now it's overdraft 2.
All right. Let's see if I've got that here.
Strongly.
I'm sorry. It's overdraft 1?
Let's go with overdraft 1 first.
Strongly encourage banks to limit to 6 the number of overdrafts a customer could incur in a 12-month period. After that time, the bank would have to contact them and offer them a lower cost alternative.
What is a lower cost alternative?
I have no idea.
Maybe a lower cost alternative is not buying the thing that you don't have money to buy. How about that, pal? Why don't you come back when you actually have money?
This is Kathleen Day with the Center for Responsible Lending. And honestly, it doesn't sound like what she's suggesting is very responsible at all.
No.
But she says the FDIC should also take it a step further.
Let me just back up for one second here, just to say. So this is exactly what I heard about this morning, that they wanted to institute some sort of a. It was sort of like, you know, you buy 5 for a dollar, but you buy 10 for 50 cents, where they were going to have some adjustable scale or some sort of sliding amount that you were penalized whenever there was an overdraft. All right, let's just take a moment here so I can find my happy place. Wait.
You play that music again.
No. Ah, there it is. Oh. Okay. Let's just move on to the next thing.
Okay.
We'll move ahead here. Yeah, you are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Because I think the second overdraft cut is. I'm looking at it now, and I'm almost certain she says almost word for word what she says in the first thing. So, and it's just going to lead us back to the beginning. I'm going to go, but Dawn, explain it. And you'll say, I don't know. It's my birthday, and then.
Can that be my excuse then today for why I don't know things? I don't know anything. It's my birthday.
You can just shrug and just beam. And look at me with those big keen painting eyes of yours. You're listening to Legion of News at PDX.FM. The Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today. Coming up at 1, we have the Rick Emerson Show featuring Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority, why isn't Happy Birthday in the public domain, Dawn?
I don't know.
The song Happy Birthday is not in the public domain. Why is that? We will answer that question. Mr. Big Jim Willig will join us in the studio today. We'll talk about his comedic performance, which is coming up live tomorrow night, Saturday night, and so forth. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Surveillance camera footage from a 7-Eleven store led police to a suspect in a violent rape last weekend in Beaverton. Beaverton police said they were called to Evelyn Schiffler Park after several neighbors called 911 after hearing a woman's screams. Patrol officers soon found a 26-year-old woman in tattered clothing with her face badly beaten in the parking lot of the First Baptist Church of Beaverton nearby. Detectives said her eyes were swollen shut and she was covered with bark dust. The woman said she met 20-year-old Set Y Ong at 7-Eleven on Hall Boulevard earlier and left the store with him after a conversation. She said at one point he hit her in the face with a closed fist and sexually assaulted her. Ong was arrested Tuesday and charged with rape, sodomy, and assault and jailed on $250,000 bail.
Now, where was she found relative to the actual 7-Eleven? Does it say if it was nearby or if it was...
I guess it was nearby. It was in, yeah.
Well, because the distance is sort of... indicates whether...
I'm not sure. If you know where Evelyn Schifflin Park is, you probably know how close it is to the 7-Eleven on Southwest Hall Boulevard.
So she met him at the 7-Eleven and left. And because a long distance implies, like, why don't you and I go out to the... And then back at my house, I've got some... But the other implies, like, hey, can you come out to my car and help me change my tire? And then he just clubs her or something.
Well, it sounds like she went with him to a park, so...
I never know how anything in the suburbs are laid out. It's
The thing is, says he doesn't look like a bad person. He has
he has
big brown dreamy eyes.
Perhaps that's how he gets women to leave 7-Elevens with him.
Probably.
Yeah, no, but he's they're big and brown, but they're just dead.
Yeah.
There's just nothing there. That's just a burned out flashbulb he's got there. All right. You are listening to Legion of News, brought to you by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty, proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about his business at 971-533-3211. Let's say you were having some sort of a festival, a gathering, a party, a shindig, a hootenanny tomorrow. Let's say that you felt that your home, I mean, not that this would ever be the case with anybody in this room, but let's say that you felt that your home was perhaps not up to snuff cleanliness-wise. Let's say a certain area of your home, guessing wildly here, maybe the carpet. Maybe the carpet, maybe the tile as you walk in. Maybe you were afraid that it was going to give some sort of social offense. The friends would come over, they would pass over the threshold of your abode, and they would say to you, "My God, what lives here? A herd of wildebeest?" And you'd say, "Why, no, it's just Patrick and Bella and myself." Theoretically, in this story that it has no relation to reality.
Right.
This is all by way of saying that if you contact Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, he can come over and he can make sure that effectively everything, like, on the floor of your home, doesn't matter what kind of carpet it is, doesn't matter what kind of upholstery or what kind of tile or what kind of marble, doesn't matter whether it's in your bathroom, your entryway, your kitchen, you can make sure that all the dirt and the grime, all the usage marks that are put on that are taken away, and it looks as good as the day you moved in. If you got carpet that you just put in the house, or you just got stone or tile or hardwood flooring or hardwood tiles, for that matter, that you put down, where you want to make sure that they keep looking as good as they do right at this moment, you call Michael Beatty and he will get it looking at 100% again, put you on a maintenance program to make sure that it looks good in the future. So you can contact him at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, proud sponsor here of Legion of News on PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Science is on the march, Friday and every day here at Legion of News.
Cities have apparently influenced human evolution, scientists now find. The findings begin with how cities help spread disease by bringing people closer together where they can infect one another. Now researchers have concluded that by making their residents more vulnerable to disease, cities increased the chance that over time the survivors' descendants could resist infection. Evolutionary biologist Ian Barnes of the University of London and his colleagues looked at a genetic variant which is associated with natural resistance to germs that dwell within cells, like tuberculosis and leprosy. They analyzed DNA samples from 17 modern populations that had occupied their cities for various lengths of time, from civilizations in Turkey, settled in roughly 6,000 BC, to Juba in the Sudan, which was settled in the 20th century.
I'm going to live in a place called Juba. It just sounds like a happy town.
It does. The scientists said they discovered a highly significant link between the occurrence of this genetic variant and the duration of urban settlement. People of a long populated urban area often proved to be better adapted to resisting certain types of infections. For instance, people in areas settled for more than 5,200 years, such as Susa in Iran, were almost certain to have this variant, while in cities settled for only a few hundred years, only 70 to 80% of the population would have it. The research shows evolution happening. Urbanization has had an impact on the human genome.
That's just liberal propaganda, Don.
The possible limitation of the study is that in most regions, populations often get replaced frequently throughout history. That could mean the populations that Barnes and his colleagues analyzed did not undergo the centuries or millennia of natural selections that the researchers assumed they did to pass down the germ-resistant genetic variant. So there you go.
So if you put a lot of people together in a small space, the churn factor is pretty high because the weaklings die off and then the strong folk have a lot of kids and then eventually you're immune to leprosy.
Plus it's that whole thing like they talk about, you should let your kids actually get dirty and don't disinfect every single thing in your house because people need to actually build up an immunity. And so, you know, in cities, in large populations, people have more opportunity to affect each other with things all of the time. And over time, apparently, it has actually affected our DNA to make us, those people who live in cities, more resistant to certain types of infection.
It's also good to leave a wide variety of garden implements and sharp knives down at an easily grabbable level.
Yeah, otherwise how do they learn?
That's what I'm saying. You know, that's, if they're not going to get it at home, they're going to get it on the street, parents. So, I mean, you know, really there in a safe environment is the best place for them to learn their chainsaw juggling. Here's the other thing. The weird thing is when you consider the fact that by going to hospitals, really, we are, in fact, not reversing evolution, but at least diluting down the evolutionary process. Mm. Every time that somebody who is sick or enfeebled in some way gets taken to a doctor, all you're doing is getting in the way of progress and nature. So consider that the next time you decide to take a bleeding relative to a to an emergency center somewhere.
Well, the thing I've always found interesting is it seems like the more diseases we cure and we get rid of and we say we won't kill people anymore, that new things just keep popping up.
Oh, yeah.
And new ways to get cancer and new stuff that had never happened before, plus like resistance to certain antibiotics, because we are designed to eventually die. We're not supposed to live forever, but we keep trying to make it so.
I've talked about this book I'm reading right now, A Short History of Nearly Everything by this guy, Bill Bryson, and the chapter I'm on right now is called Dangerous Planet, and it's an overview. I think it eventually settles on volcanology, on the sort of volcanoes and
like
the
Mr. Spock.
Exactly, Dawn, and and just all kinds of like weird, cool things that I sort of vaguely understand, but hopefully will understand more by the end of the weekend or whatever. When he talks about magma chambers and hot spots and whatever. But he opens it with the greatest phrase, where he has actually just left. We've actually just finished a chapter in the book, I say as though he's my bestest friend. We've just finished a chapter, though, where he was talking about the chances of asteroids slamming into the Earth, which is, like, forgive the pun, astronomically high.
Yeah.
And, like, an inevitability. But he opens the second phrase by saying, and he has this great clipped sort of British, he has this almost sort of like Stephen Moore kind of accent, and he says...
So you're not reading this book, you're listening to
this I actually have the physical book and I have the unabridged audiobook, and I read the physical book when I'm at home, when I'm in the car, because I'm a nerd. I have the unabridged audiobook, and I have a bookmarking program for my iPhone. And then I could just pick up where I left off at home. So I can basically be surrounded. I can be swaddled in the warm womb of science 24 hours a day, Don.
Gotcha.
But he opens the chapter by actually saying, in many ways, it does seem as though the planet doesn't entirely want us here. Seriously, from Monday...
You think?
We always do this thing on the Rick Emerson Show where we open the show with like a movie clip or an audio clip or something for a television program. I might actually just start the show on Monday with one of his sort of bemused observations about how nature is intending to kill us off at some point. I'm sorry. Here's more of Science on the March with Dawn Taylor.
Mike Boone, Vice President of Raytheon's Advanced Security and Directed Energy Systems, has a vision. He says, we want to get to the point where it's a handheld device. It is the assault intervention device. Development in that direction is underway. An AID, assault intervention device, is a pain delivery device that will soon be tested on unruly inmates at the sheriff's detention facility in Castaic, California, where an inmate brawl broke out last August, injuring two officers. The device fires a directed beam of millimeter waves that penetrate 1/64th of an inch into the skin, about four times the thickness of a piece of paper, where pain receptors are located. The invisible beam reportedly causes, quote, an unbearable burning sensation, unquote, that incapacitates the target but stops immediately once the AID is turned off.
It's like a syphilis ray.
The pain ray, as they're calling it, is being provided free of charge to the Sheriff's Department, courtesy of a program through the National Institute of Justice. Along with Pennsylvania State University, the NIJ will be monitoring the test case. Presumably, if it's successful, the devices will be installed in other prisons.
I like the idea that prison guards and cops don't actually have enough implements to cause pain right now, that they need more. No, we just don't have enough things that stab and poke and tear. Can you get us 5 or 12 more of those?
According to Raytheon and its targeted market of corrections officers, the AID causes no lasting damage. Of course, in a side note, Taser International says the same thing about tasers, despite a growing list of deaths related to taser use by law enforcement. So
no lasting damage apart from the actual death that might ensue. Now, the LAPD already has something like this. That's the intriguing thing. So maybe this is just a ramp-up of the technology that the LAPD has had, because they've been quelling riots and unruly protests and whatever for 3 or 4 years with this heat gun that you just point at people, and it just makes you feel like, as our friend Jim Rupert CNN said, as though you're in a microwave. But then they turn it off and supposedly your cells go back to normal, which just seems suspect. It seems like a bit of an implausible claim, but what do I know? This is not also unlike that thing that they unveiled in Chicago last year, which is sort of like the Ed 209 creature from RoboCop, except it just makes this horrific noise. And it just, it's sort of like the brown noise. It just makes your intestines quiver.
Oh, and
it doesn't actually, and it's not even that it's really loud, because we actually played it on the show before we before KUFO management informed us that it probably wasn't a good idea to be using the airwaves to play a sound whose sole purpose was to alienate people and horrify them and cause them physical pain. And by that, I mean Kings of Leon.
I was going to say that sounds like the direction they went to with their new programming its entirety.
See, that's the low-hanging fruit of comedy right there, Don. Yeah. I went the Kings of Leon route.
I know.
But we played this sound, and it was like, it was the first time they'd unveiled it. It was, some guys gathering at some place, and, a bunch of hoodlums. And so then you hear the cops, like, sort of coming over the hill in the distance, going like, you have 10 seconds to leave the vicinity. And then the thing just starts making this noise, and it sounded kind of like a car alarm. I mean, it wasn't.
Is that the thing where they all lose control of their bowels as well?
No, it wasn't. There's
something like that I heard about as well.
It wasn't like the low tone noise, and it wasn't even that loud. Apparently, it did sound like one of the sort of one of those kind of quavery car alarms that does the that kind of a thing, or from the video game Tron, perhaps. But even just listening to it, like on a soundbite, three times removed on the show, it was actually so disconcerting that we all took our headphones off at the same time. I really regret not keeping that. Actually, I would make it my cell phone ring. just as sort of a.
You could use that and see if you could drive that giant spider away from the side of your house.
That's a great idea. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
NASA has run into some problems. They plan on two more orbits while they work on the troublesome hooks and latches on the Russian module. Rob Navias, voice of Mission Control in Houston, says one of the three astronauts returning to Earth is flight engineer Tracy Caldwell Dyson of NASA.
The crew in the Soyuz is in good shape. They're safe and sound. They've been told to take off their gloves, get comfortable.
Terry O'Quinn, ladies and gentlemen.
Navia says there's a problem with its unlocking from the International Space Station.
The landing of Alexander Skvortsov, Tracy Caldwell Dyson, and Mikhail Kornienko in the Soyuz TMA-18 spacecraft will be delayed another two orbits while they continue to troubleshoot what may be responsible for the inability to open up hooks and latches.
It's like he's talking about the pace lap at the Indy 500 or something.
And I have no idea what he was talking about. Hooks and latches.
Apparently the Amish are constructing our space stations now.
That's all the science.
That the end of science?
That's the end of science
today.
For today.
Legion of News presents the end of science. And is Science on the March right here at Legion of News at PDX.FM, brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center. They are a language center and a Spanish learning facility located in downtown Portland, Oregon. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. Clara Grebel, who is the owner and the operator of Castalia Language Center, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina. And we talk a lot about the fact that they have designed the thing basically for adults. And that's something where we've talked about the eliminate the class sizes to 8 people, and that you're not going to be there with kids and with teenagers. Not that there's anything inherently wrong with younger people, but you just learn differently. And you don't want to be shown up by like a 10-year-old. That's the other thing. They probably don't say they're not. They don't make that. That point overtly, but I'm here to tell you that you don't want to sit there and just be shamed by some 9-year-old Spanish prodigy that's just leaving you in the dust, because then it's like you just have to go home and
the kid sitting there going, mi queso es muy malo, señor, and you're going, I can't even count, I can't do anything.
You're just staring blankly then going, gâteau, ghetto, ga gâteau, piamos de gâteau, crap. And then you should go home and reach for the Yukon Jack. So you don't want that. Then maybe you do. I mean, who am I to judge? Castalia Language Center can be found out more about. Some interesting syntax there. At PortlandSpanish.com. So eight people maximum in their class size, and they can also adjust to your schedule. So if you are somebody who needs a class in the afternoon or you're somebody who needs a class in the morning, they can handle that. They also offer these on different days throughout the week and at different levels. So whether you are just beginning, you're just heading out on the on the Spanish learning path, or if you are an intermediary Spanish student, or if you really have studied this in the past and you're just sort of burnishing your skills, you're just brushing up on it, you can do all of that. And again, they can find a time and a day that works with your schedule, and the class size is limited to 8 people, which means you're going to be learning in the same way at the same rate as other adults. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, a proud sponsor of Legion of News here at PDX.FM. They are Castalia Language Center. This is Don Taylor.
An Indianapolis bakery is under fire from the gay and lesbian community over a choice not to serve a diversity group. A campus organization said it was denied service in what's become a flashpoint in a fight for equal rights. They were looking for a multicolored cupcake to celebrate National Coming Out Day next month, a rainbow confection to honor the diversity on the campus Indianapolis University, I guess, IUPUI, I'm not sure what that is. But the student who had the order placed at Just Cookies was told no. We're right on the cusp of being equal with everyone else. I don't know why they would do that,
yes,
said student Shun Parker.
Yes, because cupcakes are really the last barrier. Not so much actual equal rights or the ability to marry or adopt children. It's cupcakes that are keeping you from having equality. Focus your energy in the right place, whatever you do.
That student's partner and close friend were both troubled by the refusal. They believed it shows Indianapolis has a ways to go to embrace the gay and lesbian community. They weren't asking to petition for anything. We were just ordering cupcakes for the event, said Rebecca Sherfield. A local Fox affiliate went to City Market to get the business's side of the story. Owner Lily Stockton of Just Cookies responded, "Look around. We don't have cupcakes," said the owner of Just Cookies.
It's called Just Cookies?
Yes. Stockton said she talked to someone who did ask for rainbow cookies but couldn't accommodate the order. She said, "I don't have enough colors to do that."
Wait, let's back up for a second. Is it my imagination or was the student talking about cupcakes?
Yes. They wanted rainbow cupcakes, because the place would not sell them rainbow cupcakes.
The place is called what?
Just Cookies. She said someone did ask for rainbow cookies, and she said they didn't have enough colors of frosting to do rainbow cookies.
Okay, now please tell me, this is like going to be my final Jeopardy question here, and I'm going to bet it all. Please tell me, for the love of God, seriously, this might be enough to make me convinced that there is, in fact, a loving deity that floats above me somewhere, like in the Cirrus, Nimbus area. Please tell me that somebody went back and on camera asked the student why they ordered cupcakes from a place called Just Cookies. Please, Don Taylor, please tell me.
I'm sure they did. That I do not know.
Aww.
As part of the story, I do not know this.
Fail.
I do know, though, that they said that she could not accommodate the order for the rainbow cookies because of the frosting. The reporter for the Fox affiliate said, "Not enough colors, not because you didn't like what they stood for."
Not because you hate the gays.
And the woman said, "She didn't tell me what it was for."
Wow. Ah. Okay. This story is both great but deeply satisfying.
Yeah.
Or deeply unsatisfying, rather, because I want some resolution. I want to go back and figure out exactly where the disconnect happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Eventually, apparently, they placed their cupcake order with another bakery. And the school has no formal complaint against the bakery and added that embracing diversity means allowing the business owners the right to their opinion and the right to choose how to serve their customers. But
it seems like part of
the problem was the fact that they don't sell cupcakes.
And also that they had an insufficient number of colors. And also that the woman sounded genuinely confused by all of the ruckus. I know exactly how these things work, though. This is one of those things where the woman who runs the Just Cookies place, she has now been permanently emblazoned with, like, the bigot tag in everybody's mind. Because they went to the wrong page in the phone book or something before calling up and, unleashing some shrill demand for cupcakes. At the Just Cookies place.
I have been told, by the way, that our levels seem to be low today. I don't know if you're aware of that on your end. Maybe it's just this guy.
Is this from Robert at PDX, or is this from some guy?
No, this is some guy.
I mean, which doesn't make it less valid, you understand,
no.
Sir? Not as such.
But it is a listener who listens to us every single day, and he says that our levels appear to be a little low today.
Well, let me see what I can... I'll take it under advisement.
All right.
Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Gold soared to a record high today, breaching the key $1,300 an ounce level, and silver traded at a 30-year high amid persistent worries about the recovery. After reaching a peak of $1,301.30 an ounce, gold for December delivered, the most active contract, eased to just under $1,300 an ounce, up $1.80 over the prior day's close. Analysts don't see a gold rush ending anytime soon. Gary Mead, commodities analyst for VM Group in London, said all the conditions are there to keep driving gold higher. A weak dollar, stubbornly high unemployment, massive U.S. government debt, and a perception that the federal government is willing to turn a blind eye to its debt are among the biggest drivers.
You know, you're not listing the biggest factor, which is just the abundance of crazy folk that we have in this country and the continued popularity of Ron Paul.
Yes.
Here's the thing, is you're saying this, and yesterday, today is Friday, right? It's been one of those mornings, by the way, where I keep forgetting what day it is. This morning, I kept thinking it was Thursday. Yesterday, I actually pulled several sound bites about the sort of... There's just no way to avoid using this phrase. It's like you see it coming, but you can't get out of the way. The gold rush that seems to be on. I had pulled these sound bites about gold, and then I just had abandoned them because I figured it was so unbelievably dull that we would never use them. And yet
here I am.
Here you are
reading
today.
This unbelievably dull story.
No. So I've got these sound bites of some guy talking about gold, if you'd like to hear them.
Sure, why not?
I don't really have any context for these except to say that it is related in a sort of overarching sense to your story about gold becoming popular because blah, 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 crazy people, blah, blah, blah.
10 years ago, the price of gold was $250 an ounce because in the year 2000, everything was great and all you had to do was buy internet startups and you'd make money.
Yes, okay. So there's
all you had to do was buy internet startups and you'd make money.
It was delivered to your home. They actually just brought the press to your living room and they sat there and they just churned out Benjamins.
Yes.
Let's just, we'll do gold soundbite number two here for no readily apparent reason.
There's a tremendous amount of interest in gold as a safe haven and a portfolio diversifier.
I like the idea that something that you can't eat, that you can't actually take to a store and use as currency, and something that has no demonstrable use above and beyond other metals unless you're making, like, phonograph players or wiring of some kind, has somehow just become, like, the de facto crazy person currency standard.
Yeah. It would be great if they just shifted it to something else, like...
Rutabagas?
Cheese. Yeah.
Or just, a scarab.
Well, there was actually a story that I read yesterday about a winery in France. A specific vintage of their wine was mentioned in a very popular manga in Japan, which is about, the manga itself is about a young man who is trying to gain control of his father's vast, expensive vintage wine collection. And apparently every time, you know, every issue that they mention some specific wine in this fictional character's collection, people start buying this wine. And so this guy, this fella in France, is seeing like some 2006 vintage of his Bordeaux. Just he got like 150 orders in one day after the latest edition of this manga was released that mentioned the wine.
Well, this is...
And so he pulled his own wine from the market because he wants it to actually, you know, be sold to people for drinking over the next, you know, several years. He didn't want it all to be hoarded and have the price go through the roof.
Wine is not for investment purposes.
Actually, some is.
But this guy, though, he doesn't want people to buy it
because
it's worth something. He wants them to buy it to savor the taste of the earth or whatever.
But it's like just how kind of crazy and insane that is. And also just that... You know, that wine increases in value because of its scarcity, and people will pay ridiculous amounts of money for a bottle of wine.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, when really you're talking...
Or buy it for investment, buy it as you know, an investment.
When it's just a bottle of rancid grape juice, yes. Really is what it is. Well, it's like how we had to live through every moron in the country talking about Pinot Noir after Sideways came out a couple years ago. It's like, you know, or like every just like dick in a pair of suspenders talking about, talking about Mont Blanco cigars, you know, like 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, because suddenly everybody was a goddamn cigar aficionado.
Yeah, but that cigar trend just disappeared like the blink of an eye, didn't it?
Yes.
That was kind of hilarious how quickly that just died.
It's almost like everybody realized that, as the late, great Mr. Carnot would say, that they just had a big brown phallus in their mouth.
You know, this is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Would you hand me the pages on the printer there?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
There you go. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk right here at PDX.FM.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday right here at Legion of News and PDX.FM.
A judge sent Lindsay Lohan back to jail Friday after she failed a drug test and the troubled starlet could stay there for nearly a month. Los Angeles Superior Court Judge Eldon S. Fox did not set bail, and Lohan was taken into custody immediately after the hearing at the Beverly Hills Courthouse. Did we have audio for this?
I don't believe so, okay. But I have questions.
Okay.
So this is today, right? September 24th, 2010, that we're reading this story?
Yes.
I haven't somehow fallen back into a wormhole inside my head and ended up in some parallel world. So she's back in jail now?
Yes.
Okay. So when did this happen?
She's being sent back to jail today. Okay. Yeah, she was sent back to jail, I guess, this morning.
Okay, so this is this is because she failed the drug test?
Yes.
Okay.
Because remember
that she did
that
Twitter thing about the, I failed the drug test and whatever. Okay, so does it say whether this is to continue, to serve out the rest of the sentence that had been suspended, or is this like a brand new sentence, do you suppose?
I believe this is a brand new sentence.
Fantastic.
Because she failed her court-ordered drug screening, which was a condition of her getting out of jail.
Right, but I guess what I'm saying is, is there an additional penalty, or is it just
this is a whole new thing that she did wrong as far as they're concerned.
So it's not like we were waiving the rest of the sentence, but now it's been enacted and you got to serve it.
Yeah, no, this is like, screwing up your parole. They consider it a whole another offense.
It's a revocation that happens. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is going to be her third jail stint for a 3-year-old drug and drunken driving case.
Well done.
Her previous stays at the jail lasted 84 minutes, and then the second one was 14 days. This time it could be a month. So, yay, Lindsay. Reality star Kim Kardashian released a statement regarding her Botox use on Keeping Up with the Kardashians, a procedure which left her face looking a bit puffy. I've been getting lots of emails and comments regarding the Botox episode, so I wanted to address this today to clear some things up. On the show, you saw I had some bruising around my eyes after the procedure, which is totally natural, but because I hadn't looked into the side effects, I freaked out. I'm not against Botox, and I would never judge anyone else for getting any kind of surgical or non-surgical procedure. You know, in other words, I'm not saying anything bad about this procedure that I probably got for free because I'm on TV.
Yeah. The whole thing with Botox, look, it's not like I pass any judgment on cosmetic surgery. Just the idea of having botulism injected into your face. I mean, it's like if somebody had some sort of a boob enhancement, but it involved just jamming salmonella into your thorax. It seems like a thing you probably wouldn't want. Botulism is a thing we've spent quite a long time trying to avoid as a species, but, what do I know?
Yeah. Comedian Bob Marley raised more than $12,000 for the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital in Portland, Maine, by joking his way to a record stand-up act that lasted 40 hours. Marley got a thumbs up from the unofficial from the Guinness Book of World Records on Thursday night at Portland's Comedy Connection, where he broke the previous record of 38 hours, 6 minutes.
Is Bob Marley a zany white man who makes the obligatory jokes about his name?
Probably.
Okay.
He is a white man, but
yeah,
yes.
Of course he is.
He started Wednesday morning and yucked it up until he reached the 40-hour mark. He says he went 18 hours before having to repeat any of his jokes.
Okay.
Taking his act to Congress, comedian Stephen Colbert told lawmakers that one day picking beans alongside illegal immigrants convinced him that farm work is, quote, really, really hard. It turns out, and I did not know this, most soil is at ground level, Colbert testified Friday. Also, it was hotter than I like to be. Colbert expressed befuddlement that more Americans aren't clamoring to begin an exciting career in the fields and instead are leaving the work to illegal immigrants. Colbert stayed in character as he offered the House hearing his vast knowledge, drawn from spending a single day on a New York farm as a guest of the United Farm Workers. Colbert pleaded with the lawmakers to do something about illegal workers because, quote, I'm not going back there. After a day of farm work, he said, I don't even want to watch Green Acres again. It was all a big sort of a stunt.
Not that I'm not amused by this, but how do you suppose that was actually put together? I mean, in other words, that Stephen Colbert, in character, and I know his name is still Stephen Colbert, but is there actually, testifying before the House?
He was there at the invitation of subcommittee chairwoman Zoe Lofgren, a Democrat from California, and he was asked to leave by House Judiciary Chairman John Conyers and to leave the job of testifying to expert witnesses, they said. He said, Conyers said, you run your show, we run the committee. Colbert responded that he was there at the invitation of Lofgren. Conyers later withdrew his request, and Colbert, gave his testimony, insisting he wanted his tomatoes picked by Americans, not Mexicans. I'm not a fan of the government doing anything, Colbert said, but I've got to ask, why isn't the government doing anything?
I'm sure that Zoe Lofgren's many constituents who aren't sketch comics appreciate the fact that the time was being spent interviewing Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's Don Taylor.
On what would have been his 80th birthday, Ray Charles has joined the likes of past presidents Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan with his own namesake library in Southern California.
I was totally going the head in a jar route, but I guess I was wrong. Okay.
The Ray Charles Memorial Library officially opened its doors Thursday night, housed in the studio and office building Charles built in South Los Angeles in the early 1960s. The library features interactive exhibits about the musician's life and career.
Okay.
Yes?
Library. Blind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know,
that just seems cruel.
We call these things libraries when, in fact, they're kind of museums. Like the Nixon Library. It's not really a library.
Is that true? So is it, when you say it's more of a, is it like a display, an archival display?
Yeah, it's a big old high-ceiling building with marble floors that you go into different rooms and there's things on display. It's a museum.
Like at the Reagan thing where, several people have mentioned this actually now, when you walk through the Reagan thing, all you really hear is just him doing the whole, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall thing, like on an endless loop. Like no matter where you go, it's just, you're taking a whiz. It's like that somebody's like pipe right into the bathroom and, you know, on top of you.
Charles' friends and colleagues, including Quincy Jones, B.B. King, producer Jimmy Jam, and filmmaker Taylor Hackford, who made the movie Ray, were welcome visitors via video to each section of the library, which is more like an interactive museum. Hey, look at that. Touch screens invite guests to explore Charles' most memorable recordings, while exhibits feature some of his Grammy Awards, stage costumes, old contracts, and sunglasses.
Fantastic. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today. We will be talking to Mr. Big Jim Willink. He'll be in the studio with us during the 2 o'clock hour, I believe, talking about his performance, which is coming up tomorrow night. That is Saturday night. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's Pop Culture Authority answers the question, why is the song Happy Birthday not in the public domain? We also have an Obama watch, a snuff watch coming up today, and Stupid Criminal of the Week. If you are a Rick Emerson listener, that starts shortly after 1 p.m. over at rickemerson.com. If you're not, you can subscribe at the low, low cost, absurdly low, obscenely low, hilariously low, mind-bogglingly low cost of only 32 cents a day. If you are not currently a subscriber and you feel as though it is beyond your financial ken, and you feel it's something you can't really justify the money on, or you know somebody who ought to be subscribing but isn't, you can enter your name or their name, as the case may be, in the pile of submissions for the Emerson Grant. The Emerson Grant, done in partnership with our good friends at New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance, about whom you can discover more at rickemerson.com, allows us to give away each month 10 one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. It's honestly just as easy to leave as a voicemail at 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Letting us know in 2 minutes or less why you or somebody you know should receive a gratis subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. That's 503-505-6964. You can also convey that via limerick or haiku to Dawn at rickemerson.com. D-A-W-N at rickemerson.com. And again, at the end of every month, we give away 10 of those one-month subscriptions to the Rick Emerson Show, courtesy of New Millennium Landscaping and Maintenance. This is Don Taylor.
A man in Michigan has been arrested after getting into a fight with a parrot that he carried around in his backpack. The man, who wasn't named but was reported to be a 49-year-old from Jackson, Michigan, was arrested in nearby Ann Arbor after witnesses reported seeing him wrestling with the bird. According to the eyewitness reports, he was shaking the pet parrot, which he had been carrying in his backpack.
Is that what the kids call it now, Don? Shaking the pet parrot?
So violently that some of its feathers were being shaken off. Three different bystanders called the police over the parrot fight. When officers arrived, they said they found the parrot to be squawking loudly. But the parrot wasn't taking things lying down. It was fighting back, according to police, who said the man's thumb was left scratched and bloodied. The parrot's owner told police he was training and disciplining the bird. He was arrested and taken to jail, where he is awaiting charges.
Okay.
A 23-year-old British woman with a multitude of body piercings and tattoos said she was humiliated after a job center official suggested, quote, putting a paper bag over your face might help her find work.
Wow.
Haley O'Neill said she left her meeting with the official in Blackburn, Lancashire, in tears after the man said, who would hire you looking like that?
You've got 4,000 holes in your face here in Blackburn, Lancashire.
The guy, quote, she said, the guy said, on first impressions, do you think anyone would hire you? Said Ms. O'Neill, who has 30 tattoos and 20 body piercings. He said, look at it this way. If you were to stand behind a wall or put a paper bag over your face, do you think you'd have a better chance? He then backtracked and tried to say he was sorry and hoped I wasn't offended, but I was. The Department of Work and Pensions denied inappropriate remarks were made, but said job hunting tips, including advice about dressing appropriately, are given to applicants.
Well, look, we often claim that the government is never honest with us and that they always just speak in a bunch of double talk and that they are duplicitous. You know, a
in
little
this case,
little straight truth is what was called for here, I think.
Exactly.
All right, it's time to bring the curtain down on this installment of Legion of News for Friday. As always, Legion of News comes to you right here on PDX.FM and from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is birthday girl Dawn Taylor. Advanced Science and Technology brought to you by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. For everybody else, we will see you Monday at noon. Have a fantastic weekend. Thank you all for listening to another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.